This is Norman Lear with my great sidekick, Paul Hipp.
Good to be here with you, Norman, on All of the Above.
That's the name of my podcast, All of the Above. And it's called All of the Above because we're going to talk about all of the above. There isn't anything sacrosanct.
There's nothing too above us or below us.
Or below us. Well, certainly nothing too below us. But we have had guests you cannot believe.
Yeah.
Guests.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus. Amazing.
Yes. And America Ferrera.
Jared Carmichael.
Yes. Oh, Amy Poehler. How did we overlook? We didn't overlook Amy Poehler. I was saving her for last. And Charles Barkley, I was saving him for first, actually, because I didn't declare up first.
I get to hang out with this guy. And this is your chance to hang out with Norman Lear a little bit here and some of these great guests.
God, I wish I was you hanging out with Norman Lear.
Yeah.
Son of a gun.
See?
That must be exciting.
It's the best. I'm telling you.
Don't miss All of the Above with Norman Lear. Download new episodes every week on the Podcast One app or subscribe at podcastone.com.
Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with some special coverage here as we are going to be talking with Nick Iadanza from Australian Survivor in a bonus weekend edition of RHAP. Nick is going to be covering Survivor New Zealand for us on our International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed, which you can find out more about later on in the show. But, of course, Nick is a Survivor super-duper fan himself. So we're going to be talking about game changers here. Of course, so much coverage already this week, starting with the Survivor Know-It-Alls. Of course, my exit interview with Zeke. We did 3 hours with Cochran, and then I went right into the voicemails with Akiva on Thursday, and then I had a little bit of a day to recuperate before we're getting into this podcast today. Yeah, the Cochran and Akiva back-to-back, that was a real test for me, because Cochran and I went sort of straight through, like no breaks, and then I was kind of mean. I was like, Cochran, like you have to leave. I have another podcast that's scheduled right now, so I had to go basically almost 5 hours straight of podcasting for me on Thursday, and then I was just sort of like exhausted by the time that day was over. But enough about, you know, again, they're like, just show us the podcast. Don't tell us about the labor pains. Okay. So that's what we're going on earlier this week. So this should be a fun show here with Nick coming up in a moment. Let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends, the good people, the Canvas people. The Canvas people are helping you out, taking all of the many photos that you have stored digitally, and they are turning them into beautiful works of art. Word on the street, it's a fantastic Mother's Day gift. Mother's Day is coming up next weekend, Sunday the 14th. And if you haven't done anything yet for mom, this is a great idea, because they have a special offer at Canvas People where if you use promo code RHAP, you can get up to an 11 by 14 canvas for $0. You just pay the shipping. I think it's like $18.95, but all in all, you're in and out for under $20, and it's a great looking gift. Nicole and I got one of the boys, and we have it hanging up on the wall. We're really impressed with it. We think you will be too. Over 1 million people have given Canvas People a try and become satisfied customers. So to get this special offer, just go to the link canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, and select the 11 by 14 size and the promo code RHAP in the promo code box in the cart to get that special $0 pricing. That's canvaspeople.com, promo code RHAP. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring our guest back here for this special edition of the podcast that all people all over the world fell in love with this man when they watched him as one of the true game changers of Australian Survivor. And I'm so excited to talk about not only the game changers, but also introduce him as the host of our International Survivor coverage here on reality TV Wrap-Ups. Please welcome back Nick Iadanza.
Woo! What an intro. Thank you so much. I would be great if the people who I was playing the game with fell in love with me as well. But
Yes. Only people that saw you for the 12 hours a week that Australian Survivor was on TV, not the people that lived with you 24 hours a day.
24 hours a day is just too much. Ask my wife.
Yes. And now your wife, the last time we talked to you, I believe, was what, in early December? Because I think I put up my Christmas tree then that day that I talked to
That's
you.
That's right. Yeah.
And then then you've gotten married since then. How about that?
Thank you. It's been a pretty big year. It's been this time last year, I was still in the classroom teaching. I was not a survivor. 12 months later, I've been on Survivor. I've gotten married, been on various honeymoons, and I am now podcasting with you. It's been a pretty big 12 months.
Yes. What a great year it's been. And of course, Survivor New Zealand kicks off what, in the next couple of days?
Yeah. So today is actually tonight is the first episode. And so tomorrow there's another episode. So week one rolls around beginning now. So my foray into solo podcasting without you as the training wheels is beginning.
Okay. Now we're going to be talking about Survivor Game Changers, but in terms of New Zealand Survivor, what is your approach to podcasting that show, to covering a series on twice a week?
Okay. So what we're going to be doing is there's going to be a 90-minute episode on the Sunday and then a 60-minute episode on the Monday. And then around Tuesday or so, we're going to be just recording kind of like what you did with the Know-It-Alls. And we're going to be just doing one episode per week. It'll be myself and like a little rotating roster of various survivors, Australian survivors, got a few people from the RHAP community. We've got some American survivors as well. So hopefully we can get everyone kind of circled through. My first guest is going to be the real game changer of Survivor AU, not me, the phony game changer. We've got Phoebe Timmons coming in. So it's going to be an awesome way to kick off the season.
Okay, well, great stuff. If you want to subscribe to our international Survivor feed, you can go to robbiswebsite.com/SurvivorNZ for that. That's going to be one feed for New Zealand and Australian Survivor when that rolls around. Australian Survivor to the Australian Outback is going to be coming, this summer, Nick?
So that'll be coming, your summer. So the people actually just left this week to go and film.
Okay.
So
wow.
It's all kicking off. They'll be back, in 365 days from the day the show finishes filming?
Yes. Well, yeah, the second season, you have to go longer than the first season. I mean, that's tradition. All right. So be on the lookout for that. Looking forward to checking it out.
It's so funny because, New Zealand always gets lumped in with Australia. Like, throughout history, we steal their celebrities, like Olivia Newton-John. I'm pretty sure she's New Zealand, or, people like that. And now they've been lumped together in the under my little umbrella on yes. RHAP. So we'll try give them the respect they deserve, they're going to have to earn it.
You may cover other countries' Survivor down the road, so it may just be a complete international. You might be covering a Japanese Survivor someday.
I'm going to Africa in the middle of the year for a honeymoon, so maybe I'll check out if Botswana's got one going and we'll see if we can loop them in.
I know a lot of Genius fans that would be interested in South Korean Survivor.
True. Very
okay.
True.
All someday. Right. Yes, that would be a big crossover hit. All right, so be on the lookout for all of that. And if you want to know how to watch New Zealand Survivor, I'm just going to tell people to check out Reddit, because I feel like that they're going to be on top of all that. Go to reddit.com/r/survivor, and I'm sure there's going to be links to be able to see those episodes.
The good people of the internet will provide. It's not even airing here in Australia, so I'll be checking out Reddit as well.
Yeah, if you're resourceful enough, I'm sure you'll find it. Just like a hidden immunity idol, like we've seen so many of them this season, Nick.
They're just like giving them away. It's great. It's so good. I'm not one of these people that sits there and goes, oh, there's too many advantages. It's like, no, pile them in. Give more. They should just be like, they should be dropping them from the sky, like periodically with little parachutes. Like, I think it's so much more fun when you're sitting there going, oh my God, Ty's not going to play his idol. Or like, oh yeah, when you realize that Troyzen does have an idol. I think it's fun. I'm definitely enjoying it. I think the best part that's come out of any advantage, what's your opinion of the best part that's come out of any advantage this season? Cause I've got certainly a favorite in my mind.
Was it Sarah saying that she hopes she doesn't play her advantage wrong like Stephen Fishback?
I don't have a bell, but ding, 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 ding.
Please, Stephen's very sensitive about this.
Oh, no, I know. I know he is. And look, as someone who played an idol that when he thought he was going home, and yeah, I got a few votes, but I didn't completely need it. I understand, but it's just so funny. It's just so funny. Does this mean that in season two of Australian Survivor,
yes,
that like if they do the neutral box, they'll be like, remember this destroyed Nick's game?
Yes.
Does that mean that I've made it?
Yeah.
I think you've made it when you become a cautionary tale in an advantage clue.
Yeah, I think that that's very important. I think infamy is much better than being forgotten.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to know whether you've made it on Survivor. One, whether you get your name written in an advantage, or two, whether you get some sort of Twitter bot made about you.
Yes.
So
those are
until there's an
deals.
Idanza bot, yeah, I'll stick with the first.
Okay, so let's talk about the season overall. I know you like all of the twists and the advantages. Have you been high on Game Changers overall as a season?
Yeah, it's funny, like, coming into the season, I was super pumped, obviously, for all the people that are no longer there. I put out a tweet that was like, oh, you know, before the season start, like, oh, the Mana Tribe. Oh, the Mana Tribe's the best tribe. I'm so excited to see all these people march to the end. And now what are we left with? Like, Troyzan? Like, it's pretty crazy.
And Mikaela.
Everyone. And, you know, and Mikaela, and I guess Aubrey, but I would never would have imagined that that those three people would be the last people. All those other crazy big players left. And that put a bit of a sour note on it, but I'm still loving the season. I've actually been hearing from a few people who aren't loving the season. A few people feel like that the gameplay has been a bit frenetic, but I definitely don't subscribe to that. I think it's been super entertaining. I think you guys touched on it. I think it was in the pod with Cochrane, seeing new characters emerge with some bigger characters, maybe only playing that supporting role. So that's been pretty interesting. But the thing that's really holding this whole season together for me is our good friend Ceree Fields. She is the heart and soul. She is the strategic underpinning of this whole season. And if she gets voted out next, then I think we're in trouble. But yeah, I think Ceree is holding it together for us.
Okay, so do you see a path to the end for Ceree? Because I agree with you. I feel like that there's a lot of people in that position who are saying, yeah, there's been a lot going on, but I have my horse in the race, and that is Ceree. And not Sierra Dawn Thomas's horse.
Boston Rob carried the tribe on his shoulders. Ceree's carrying like the hopes of the entire Survivor community on her shoulders. I think at this point we can, you know, I don't want to talk about edit, but like, you know, you can rule out maybe Aubrey's going to be able to, you know, she's our other horse in the race. But I think Ceree really is, we're all banking on her carrying us through to the end. But like, Rob, how has no one come for her? Like, I cannot understand it. Can you explain it to me in some way? Can we talk it through? Like, it just boggles my mind.
Yeah, it's a really great point, because that she seems like the natural progression, where we've had so many of these big names, all of the, you know, faces of the franchise have been sort of like picked off, really, without exception, except for her.
Yeah. It's crazy. I was thinking about, you know, what could this possibly be? Is it that maybe they don't know of her legacy? But I can't see that as being true. But I came up with this idea. What about big game hunting fatigue?
Big game hunting fatigue. Okay, so they went for all the big names and now people are tired of it, and it's sort of gone the other way?
That at one point, do you know how everyone says, you know, you're a threat because you're not a threat? That they've just been like, well, look, we've done all this hard slog. We got rid of Sandra. There goes Malcolm. Catch you later, Tony. See you later, Ozzy. And now it's like, okay, let's kind of turn our attention elsewhere. I feel like that maybe she, just like she benefited from not going to tribal for so long, she can benefit from being like the last one standing. That at some point they've got to mix it up a little bit. I don't know. Does that seem like a plausible excuse? I can't fathom that her name isn't coming up, and I can't fathom that so many people are in lockstep with her.
I just think that she's so good when she's out there. And again, she has that same thing like Sandra has, where once you get to the merge, I just don't think that people look at her. I think there's so much focus on who can win the challenges, who could we go after on that side. And you have Andrea, who's a close ally of her, and she's sort of like absorbing all that heat because she's winning challenges. That I feel like that people are aware of Ceree, but she probably has a better social game. With all fairness to Andrea, that she definitely has a tighter bond with people than Andrea does. And then Andrea is the one who's fighting with Zeke, and then also the one that is winning challenges. So I think that she's been a really effective meat shield for Ceri.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, this social game, I was rewatching the episode. There was just this moment where Ceri's walking down to the well with Andrea, and she says, you know, I think all we need to do is I need to find Sarah and I'll talk. We talk. Like, she just catches herself, even just with the use of a pronoun, just saying, like, so it doesn't seem to Andrea that she's as close to Sarah. It's just everything is just so methodical and calm. And I just, the way she was telling Michaela to calm down, she told Andrea to keep it tight when Sarah was coming. It's just like, she's just this big calming influence, but no one seems scared that underneath the calm, there's like a storm brewing. And I just absolutely love that. It's just brilliant.
Now, do you think that Ceri could potentially survive this sort of coup d'etat that could be in the works if Sarah ultimately ends up jumping back to the other
definitely,
side?
Definitely. Definitely. And I've got a new theory. Theory about how the game is going to go. So before the season, Ty was my winner pick based purely on the fact that, like, he's just like a bloodhound for idols. And I feel like he's just, you know, beneficial enough in the challenges that he'll stick around. He's nice enough, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So, but I'm ditching that theory. That was a pre-season theory. Mm-hmm. My new theory, and it formulated the night of the merge, is that we have a Ceri, Michaela, and Sarah final three.
Ceri, Michaela, Sarah final three. Okay,
I feel like a few people have spoken about this, so it's not groundbreaking news, but like what I was thinking of is this whole idea that Ceri's problem is someone taking her to the end, right? Like someone saying, you know, come with me to the final tribal council and actually making good on that promise. She needs someone who is actually going to do that. And I think that's where Michaela comes in. We had that big, you know, you had that big discussion about, you know, is it going to be Michaela going for Ceri? Is it going to be Ceri going for Michaela? And I really do think that Ceri will benefit from the Michaela relationship. I really do, because I think that in that final kind of immunity challenge, I can see if Michaela and Ceri are there, I can see Michaela winning, I can see Ceri being brought along, and I can see them targeting people who they perceive to be, you know, bigger threats before then, people like Brad, etc. And I do see a path to the end for Ceri.
So in that scenario, you feel like that Sarah is not going to flip back this week. You feel she's going to stick it out, and somewhere along the way, I guess that Andrea is probably going out at final four.
No, I see the switch happening, but Andrea, like you said, taking the heat. Like I just
and then they flip back.
Yeah. And I feel that Ceri, whether she's out of the loop on it or she, you know, somehow, I just feel Ceri will be safe because, like you said before, they'll be coming for Andrea. And the whole thing that we were shown about Michaela and Sarah talking about how it was a stupid plan to get rid of Zeke, nothing bonds you more on Survivor than like other people's stupidity.
Yeah.
Like, did you experience that while you're out there? Like, someone will say something or propose a plan, and then when they walk off, like, it's not whether you're saying, you know, oh, we're not doing that plan and coming up with a new one, but sometimes you just look at people and say, like, that was the dumbest plan ever, and you'll just kind of, like, roll your eyes, and it'll bond you together against them. While you might still be working as a three or a four, that stupidity is just kind of like that funny little like snarky moment that can connect you to someone else. And I do think that Sarah and Michaela like will not forget Andrea's transgression there.
Have we seen a lot with Sarah and Michaela before this week? I mean, was Zeke just sort of the connective tissue between those two people in the game? Because Zeke was tight with Sarah, and I guess we just sort of like discovered this week, oh, actually Zeke and Michaela did get along well from Millennials versus Gen X, but I don't really remember anything with Sarah and Michaela before. And now they're talking about potentially going together to a final five.
Can you honestly say there's been a lot of Sarah and Zeke before this episode?
There has been enough.
There's been a little bit.
And certainly from the whole Varner incident where you saw their sort of like in the fallout as well as during that tribal council, you know, Sarah said like, hey, I've been with Zeke the whole time. I look at Zeke this way, and she's always wearing Zeke's jacket, you could tell on the episode. So I definitely got that bond. But in terms of the Michaela bond with those two players, I've only seen Michaela shown bonding with Ceri.
Yeah, I think the overarching theme of the season has been that Sarah has all these bonds with everybody. She was the one that was shown talking to Troy Zan after the first swap. She's got this like you know, this amazing relationship with Ceri that she told her about the legacy advantage. Now she's got one with Michaela. So, like, we're getting this story that everyone feels connected to Sarah, that, yeah, sure. It's highly plausible that her and Michaela are close. She's close with everyone else. She's, you know, probably close to the cameramen out there. She's just, like, chatting up a storm, and everyone is, like, in Sarah's pocket. It is so crazy. And it speaks to the fact that the reputation you go into the season with has such a big deal. It's one of the reasons why, like, I would probably say probably no point in me going out there again, because there's a reputation. Sarah went in with such a good reputation, which is that she is rock solid and she hates people that flip, and she will, you know, even though she's not doing that, people are buying what they were sold, you know, what, 3 years ago, whatever it was.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because, you know, coming into this season, and again, Tony did not do a good job of making people comfortable. He actually made people much more uncomfortable. But I have been saying that, you know, I feel like that there's been sort of like an anti-Tony sentiment among players, and not against him personally, but against people that play like Tony. That makes everybody uneasy. And she kind of came into the season with the air of, I am the anti-Tony. I'm against what Tony stands for. And I think that that was something that made people want to work with her, even though she, in reality, she came in and said, hey, I actually want to work and play like Tony. So it was a really good cover for her. But just to go back to your earlier point about Ceri and Sarah and Michaela potentially being in the final three, do you think, and I know that you are a huge Ceri fan, I have many times called Ceri the greatest player to never win the game. Should Sarah win in the finals over Ceri?
Yeah, look, that is a huge fear of mine, but I just can't see people not giving it to Ceri. Like, how can you not? The story alone, and, you know, as someone who, you know, ruminated and stewed and, you know, jury villa, you just want a story that you can believe in. And while Sarah's story is good, no one's is better than Ceri. Four times out there, and so many times come so close and not won, a legend of the game, 100-something plus days, made it all to the way to the end, finally was able to close on something that she's, you know, hasn't been able to do yet. Who in their right mind would not give it to Ceri?
Well, let me ask you some questions here, okay? Because you're making very logical points about why Nick Iadanza, Survivor fan, would vote for Ceri. It's a coronation of her in a four-time out career. And certainly, you know, she had the moment with the balance beam. Everybody, if that was an authentic
that
moment
so
in terms
stupid.
Of...
That so
well,
stupid.
If, again, that the show was selling it as... That it, and again, there were a lot of players in the secret scenes that commented on what a, you know, a heroic moment it was. So I will give it the benefit of the doubt there. But
yeah, okay. Talk about chewing the shrubbery.
Right. So if you have players, though, that are voting, does Brad Culpepper really have a sense of the legacy of Ceri? Does Sierra Dawn Thomas have a sense of, you know, Ceri's Survivor career when all three of her times out were well before Survivor Worlds Apart? How many of those people on the jury, are they going to be more affected by the person that was making more moves? And again, Ceri is playing a much more subtle game. The people that are out there on the jury, could they potentially be more swayed by somebody who may have more to point to in season 34?
Okay, well, let's run it through. Say we did have a Ceri, Sarah, Michaela final three. P.S. Michaela, zero votes. That's for sure. So say that was the final three.
It'd kind of be in Ceri's best interest if she can get Michaela on the jury at that point, which is another Tony move, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I was thinking that. Well, look, we've got Aubrey, we've got Zeke, we've got Andrea. These are huge fans of the show. These are people that are I can't see any way they wouldn't vote for Ceri. Someone like Ozzy, just because of his connection with Ceri, I think he's aware of the legacy.
That's four.
I can see him voting for Ceri. That's four. I was watching the Ponderosa videos, and Haley seemed like she. I'm going to vote for someone who has, you know, grabbed this game by the balls, and I'm going to vote for someone who was a mover and a shaker, and I guess that could go either way.
That sounds more like a Sarah to me in terms of somebody, like, we're watching all the subtle things that Sari is doing, so I feel like that if you're saying, like, hey, who's making the biggest moves this season, I feel like that person on the jury is going to say Sarah.
Good point.
It'd be interesting. I don't want to spend too much time on this hypothetical, but I think it might be interesting to say, you know, we feel like, okay, if Sari can just make it there, she'll be a slam dunk lock to win, you know, going away. But I just wonder, like, we've never really had this situation before where somebody who's a legendary player gets to the end, where, you know, with Boston Rob, it was such a slam dunk against Natalie and Phillip, where we haven't had that situation. I guess Coach and Sophie is probably maybe the one where Coach, it would have been a coronation, you know, three times out there, and now he finally has reached the final tribal council on his third time out, and the jury rewarded Sophie. Not to say that Sophie was undeserving in any way, but I just don't know necessarily if the way a jury thinks, they buy into, okay, this is the correct narrative of rewarding a person who has made, like, for whatever reason. So
there's a deference for Sari as opposed to someone like Coach. But look, Sarah,
I don't want to say that. I just don't get it twisted. People in the comments, Stan Bueno or anything like that. It's not that I'm saying that Sari is playing a bad game. I'm just saying I wonder if the jury may be, you know, very much against the type of game that Sarah is playing, really flipping around, and they go by the person that they had the best social game. Which probably would be Sari. So it's dangerous to sort of like predict how the jury is going to go at any point.
I think Sarah would just be happy if she won a fishy.
she just needs a fishy. Come on, Stephen, stop holding out.
Stephen is tempting her to come for his week. She is like,
right.
Anyway, give her a fishy, give Sari the win, and we can all go home happy with the season.
Nick, will you have some version of the fishy in your New Zealand Survivor recaps?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to throw
marinate that over to
the patrons and to the fans. Send me your suggestions on Twitter.
I want to talk a little bit about the decision that we saw Andrea and Sari's side make this week. As a strategist, did you like what they did to take out Zeke? Because while they did get rid of somebody who was a threat, they lost a bit of their cushion in terms of the numbers. Did you think that that was the right call?
I really did, especially because Andrea had the immunity necklace. She was definitely emboldened by that. And Zeke is just like, there's an enthusiasm. I think in some ways, and I'm not comparing Zeke to myself because Zeke is an infinitely better Survivor player, but when you watch him, there is just this enthusiasm to play the game. There's just this idea. He says, you know, I'm going to do what I'm best at, which is running around and voting people off. Like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to kind of get in and, you know, play the game and do that enthusiasm for what it's supposed to be. And I think that sends such a bad message to people. I know it sends such a bad message to me. People got me voted out twice. He had to go. Like, he just had to go. Steven's right. When your name comes up, it doesn't stop coming up. My name came up, a couple of times in a row, and then eventually it was just like, fine, we'll acquiesce, we'll get rid of Nick. Because once your name's on that ballot, like, it's really hard to get off. So it was the right move for Andrea, definitely. It was not the right move for Sari. Like, I really don't think it was at this point in the game, because the obvious, if they were planning a counterattack, they would have thought, okay, well, they're probably going to come for Andrea. I'll give you my idol. Say she did have an idol. So the common thing there is we won't go for the obvious person. We'll go for the second in charge. And I thought it was going to blow back on Sari if Zeke and everyone kind of got together. So I think Sari was dicing with death there. But I do think that for Andrea, it was definitely the right move. And for a lot of people, Zeke's just not trustworthy. He didn't put across the right vibe. I'd rather play with Sierra than with Zeke.
Right. Now, let me make the counterpoint there, where maybe I think it might have been a good move for Suri, because I think that going back to your earlier hypothetical of a Sarah and Michaela final three with Suri, I'm wondering if Suri might be looking at it, hey, I know that Sarah is really tight with Zeke. This is a twofold move where I get rid of somebody who is the biggest strategic threat that's out there. Suri said in the episode, I've played this game four times. He knows the game better than me. He's also a wild card. He's gone to the other side. Suri takes that out of the equation. And at the same time, she frees up a pair, which was Sarah and Zeke. And who is the natural person to pick up that pair? In Suri's mind, she's saying, maybe, hey, this could be me. And maybe she's already looking at that final four and saying, okay, this is my game plan. I have Michaela, who I trust implicitly. I'll have Sarah with me, and two people that can potentially beat Andrea in the challenges. And if they both want to go to the end with me, I mean, this is the ability to do like what she couldn't do in Micronesia, yeah, where Amanda won that final challenge and said, yeah, can't take Suri to the end. But if she could have two people there, and then if she could just have people that could beat Andrea at the end, and who's to say Andrea wouldn't take her to the end? But I think Andrea probably would be, knows her history enough to know Suri would be, have a really good shot in the end. That could be what Suri is thinking.
Yeah, it could be. It's high risk, high reward. And that's why I like this season, because people are willing to make those risks, because I do think there is a huge risk. Look, Michaela's not the best Survivor player, but she articulated it perfectly. I don't like this one vote buffer. I don't like this just having one person, getting down to five and four again. But that's the risk that they took. I think it will pan out correctly. I think I just do think that it was dicey for Suri. It does open up a little bit the game to the other people, and that's where that other side. Which, look, if that other side gets the end, it's going to be pretty. Don't you reckon this will put it all the way down the bottom in terms of seasons? Like, no offense, I like watching these people. I've enjoyed Brad's time. Ty was my, preseason winner pick. But say we get a finale of Brad, Troy, Zan, Ty, or final four of Brad, Troy, Zan, Ty, Sierra. Like, not a great turnout, you'd have to say.
Let's see how we get there. I mean, I think it's a little unfair to say, going in, it could turn out to be an exciting way to get there, and then ultimately they end up winning more favor. But just in terms of hype level going into that,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right. It's very possible to have a really exciting Super Bowl with two teams that, nobody really wanted to see in the game. So
can we just talk about that moment with Andrea and Suri at the well? I loved that.
Yes.
I loved that too. And I thought the pacing of it was really good. I felt like this episode particularly had a very different pace. I'm not sure if you noticed that or if that was something that anyone else noticed, but I felt like it's devoted more time to allowing longer cuts between the shots and just allowing the conversation to breathe a little bit. And we were able to see the way that the characters actually interact, the way they smile at each other, etc. It felt like we were getting a real insight into the dynamics as opposed to just like a highly structured version of events. And to me, the best was that scene at the well. You see Suri and Andrea walk up, then you see them talking, then you see Sierra walk up, then you see Sarah walk up. It was such a nice, long, extended scene, but not in a way that wasted any time. I just absolutely loved it. And when you said step into my office, it was like they were stepping in and they were like the board of directors, or I thought it was brilliant. It was like The Office, like the show, like The Well Office. It was just brilliant. Like,
it was probably most similar to when you watch the Big Brother live feeds and you have like people up in the HOH room, and it's the night before the nominations or right before the nominations, and then people are coming up to like the alliance that's in power in the HOH and sort of like making their case about who's going up on the block. Okay, let's make this deal. Okay, you keep us off the block. It really did have that feel, and it was very fun to be a fly on the wall with those conversation.
And that's the thing, like a fly on the wall. Like I felt like I was watching The Office. Like I felt like at any minute we were going to get, Suri was going to look at the camera and do like,
no, Sandra's going to come back and do that.
Yeah.
That's her move.
We need like, Michael Scott Pollard or something like that to come in, and like, Jim Rice or something like David Dwight, well, I don't know, something like we just, there was like this awesome scene where we were getting a real fly on the wall of this little wacky family trying to kind of put something together. Brilliant. Okay. Brilliant.
I want to talk a little bit about Zeke further, and let me play you a voicemail that we have left over from our voicemail podcast. And this is Syrup Guy with a question about Zeke.
What's up, Rob and Akiva? It's Syrup Guy calling in from Canada. Based solely on Zeke the Survivor player that we've seen for the last two seasons, is it inevitable that we're going to see a third time for Zeke? I think it is, but I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Thanks.
I feel so honored to be Akiva.
yes, that we didn't talk about this, but I always like to address this question, especially when we get into third time's the charm.
Yeah.
Do you think that we will see a third time out for Zeke? That I feel like that he's probably lukewarm at best about it, but do you think that the show wants to pursue the third time out for Zeke?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think of everyone on this season, and we don't know what happens moving forward, but I think of everyone this season, Zeke has got the biggest chance of coming back. Like, people say, like, oh, you know, Ozzy might come back. I don't see it. I think the show's out on Ozzy now. I think that's done. But someone like Zeke, there's so much more life left in him. And yeah, definitely. Just, like, the, you know, it sounds bad, but the Varna thing alone, like, you know, giving him redemption for that. Like, and then you add on top of the fact that he's like super compelling and.
Yeah, well, and redemption's probably not the right word.
I do think from, like, the Varna thing alone does really kind of, like, provide him that kind of redemption, because when you listen to his exit interviews, he seems so crushed by the fact that it changed the way people perceived him, and it kind of, like, removed all that goodwill he had built up through his own great gameplay. So I do think that they will come back to him. And on top of that, he's such a good narrator. He's such a good game player, and he always provides TV. So I don't think there's any doubt. What do you think?
I think that he would certainly be invited back, but I would, again, and what do I know about anything? You know, I told Andrea, what do you need this aggravation for? And now she might win. But I said, I think I would say to Zeke, you know, publicly and privately, I feel like that really what's going to change to come back? Because if there's some concern of, okay, him going to the end, would that be a story? I think that's still going to exist in another season, and people are probably going to be saying the same thing. And then also, you know, he has a reputation now of being a hard player and somebody who really knows the ins and outs of the game. And as I can attest, and I'm sure, like, where you're saying, he's like, well, people have a reputation of me as being really schemey or being a strategist. That's typically a person that gets targeted. So I think that he has a real uphill battle. So if he's dying to go do Survivor again, certainly go do it. But I feel like that he is not somebody that I would pick out and say he has a great shot coming back.
Well,
to win.
Cochrane brought up a great point when you guys were talking about, like, what's Cochrane's legacy. And I think I've figured it out. And you guys said casting, and that's true. Like, you know, that typical nerd archetype, which has now extended itself to, like, the female nerd and stuff like that. That's all true. But I think what Cochrane's biggest legacy is the, like, the changing the narrative of a returning player. So his legacy exists in an all-star season. So coming out of South Pacific, everyone was like, you know, he's this, like, slimy little, you know, flipper that, you know, turned on everyone and blah, 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 and then got kind of, like, tossed to the wayside. And then he came back a second time and was able to prove that he's actually, like, a calm, strategic force that was able to...
Yeah, he's the great example, because I think that everybody was like, how could anybody trust him in a second season after what he did?
Yes.
He shouldn't play again.
Definitely.
He should stay home. And he was able to really defy those expectations. And again, he happened to be with a lot of people that really enjoyed his company, especially in the first half of the game. Look at all of the returning players. They all liked him. He happened to be with a couple people from South Pacific that didn't hate his guts. So it was a good landing spot for him also. And he also made the most of his opportunity.
Definitely. And that's kind of like the same thing with Brad this season. So that's both of their legacies. And it's their legacy that should give someone like Zeke a little bit of hope. Someone like, you know, say, for example, for me again, because this question always comes, sorry to bring it back to me again, but people always say, you know, would you come back? And it's just like, you know, what's the point? But then you see someone like that who's able to completely change the narrative, and I think that's the legacy. So Brad and Cochran, they've both, although they're both completely different character archetypes, I feel like that's the legacy that we'll take away from their second time on Survivor.
Let's talk a little bit about the cast this season. In our conversation coming into the podcast, I asked you if there were any topics that you wanted to make sure we hit. You said that you think it's interesting that this is another season where we have no villains on Survivor. So do you feel like that is really the direction of the season? Do we shy away from the villains, or in a post Russell Hance world, have players really shied away from going for that?
I guess the whole thing hinges on the idea, like, well, do you first of all agree that there is no villain this season? The closest thing we had to a villain was the whole Varna thing at the end, but I want to discount that because I don't really count that as like traditional villain. Beyond that,
you know, and even in that, you know, the show, you know, it was like a villain turn for, you know, 10, 15 minutes on the show, and they ended it on a positive note.
So who do you think would be the villain of this season if you had to really, like,
Tell me this, as somebody who I think at times might have been seen as a villain, certainly by your castmates, I don't know necessarily by the viewers.
Yes, by the viewers.
Does a player make a decision to be a villain, or does production make a decision on a villain?
It's production, and this is what is so interesting to me, and this is what why I think US Survivor has evolved in so many ways into a better product, because it's no longer such this binary concept like here are the 10 good players and here are the 10 bad players or like evil characters, because it's kind of become so much more nuanced than that. Whereas I do think, and you know, Australian Survivor was, I thought, such an amazing product, but it was still in its infancy and it was still working on those kind of like almost antiquated assumptions that like, okay, these will be our villains and these will be our heroes. Whereas we have proven with Millennials, Gen X, and now with Game Changers that you don't always need the drama to evolve from who's good and who's bad. It evolves from who's playing the game and who's not playing the game. And I think that that is where the difference is. So when you look at someone like this season, there really has been no villain. You'd probably say like Sandra was getting the villainous edit, but again, she's much more nuanced than that. I was definitely a villain. I was told before the show started, I said, you know, what kind of, you know, why did you choose me? I said, what was it when we were sitting there before I left in Sydney? I said, why was it that you put me on this show? And they said, oh, we think that you're someone who's going to do everything that it takes to win, a villain with a heart of gold. And I was like, villain? I'm not a villain. Like, I'm just like, I just want to play the game. And I was like, okay, whatever they think. I don't really care, because I always just wanted to play the game. It didn't matter. But then when you're out there, you can see the narrative starting to craft itself in front of you. And look, I did villainous things. Like, I lied about the neutral box. I fought with Jenna Louise and I fought with Sam and I guess I fought with Sue and Lee and okay, do you know what? Maybe I was a villain. I don't know. Maybe I was a villain, but the show definitely was wanted me to be this character because they're trying to kind of sell this idea that we have good and bad. And I just think that we don't need that anymore.
I would say though, and again, it's not necessarily fun to be the villain. I don't mind a season with a villain, and I think that those are some of the most fun seasons that we have. I know a lot of people don't love Samoa. Some people do really enjoy it, and again, not everybody looks at Russell as a villain in that season, but heroes versus villains, certainly. And then if you look at Tony as a villain, like I do like the idea of some bad actor, and I'm not talking about like in Lisa Welchel sense. I'm talking about like somebody who is like consciously trying to, you know, create some sort of, whether it's chaos or really throwing a monkey wrench into things. I think that player is fun, but I think we've also established that we don't necessarily need that player.
Definitely. Definitely. I think that it's really fun, but I just would hope that the show, whether it's the US, the Australian, and now the New Zealand one, is allowing it to happen rather than kind of forcing it to happen. And let me just kind of like end all this by saying, like, I'm not complaining about the fact that I was the villain. I think it's bloody awesome, because the one thing I said before I left, I said to my fiance at the time, I said, babe, I just want to have an impact on the show. Like, I just don't want to be someone who floats in and then floats out. And if that means being a villain, then great. It's just when you think about it from like a more, you know, evolution of the game, a game perspective. And this is kind of like brings me to Survivor New Zealand. Now, I may have watched the first 15 minutes of the episode sneakily. And there's this really interesting moment that there, I don't want to spoil it, but it happens in the first scene and it'll kind of be a nice teaser for people. The host, they're standing on the mat and the host says, who here is happy to say that they will be the villain of this season? And someone puts their hand up.
Oh.
So, which is, that's kind of like throws another wrench in this whole conversation because that person is self-identifying and reporting to people that they are happy to be the villain. So I'm not quite sure what's happening there, but an interesting story to track considering this discussion about whether we need a villain and whether a villain is actually there on the beach or constructed after the show's finished.
Yeah, and I think it's a fine line, especially like going back to some of the things that we were talking about with Cochrane, where I think just like going out there and being a horrible human being, I don't think that that's the right approach for anybody to take, especially in this world where everybody who's watching the show, if they want to, can contact
you.
They can contact you directly. But I do think that what still is fun and what plays is when the people that you are out there playing with don't know you're the villain, but you are telling the audience about how you are the villain. I think that that's something that still is one of my favorite things in reality TV.
Yeah, well, we had that on our season with Andy. Now, no one knew that Andy was, you know, saying all the things he was saying behind to camera. We just thought that he was just this kind of like this lump, this guy that just kind of sat there and was like, you know, thought that he was happy to be there, but you never looked happy.
Right.
And then we'd watch at home and then we were like, what was this? Like, he'd be like eviscerating us all, talking about shooting ducks in a barrel. And it was awesome TV. I loved it. I absolutely loved having Andy on the season. But yeah, he was that. And I don't think that played very well for the audience. I think maybe he thought it was going to play.
Also, I don't know necessarily if he was like backing it up as much as he was saying that he was doing all these things.
Yeah, Andy was good for the season.
Yes.
But it's funny. I just think I wonder if moving forward, there will be a swing back on the US season and they will put people who are just these like dastardly caricatures of themselves. I have a feeling that's going to happen in season two of Australian Survivor. You know, someone like, you know, think of reality TV shows like these other great shows with cute, like a Teresa Giudice or something, like someone who just would come in there and like flip the shelter or I don't know, someone, so it's just someone who's just like completely unhinged from reality.
Oh, I thought you meant as like a tax evader.
That too.
Please, so we don't need to go there.
No, Survivor's had its fair share of those. I'm talking about someone who's just like a completely unhinged,
right,
there to just kind of like cause drama, almost maybe like a Nayonka. Like, I'm not sure. Are we going to be swinging back there? Maybe. I'd like to see a shelter get flipped. That would be kind of...
Yeah, I feel like that we did get that at times in Koh Rong with some of like Scott and Jason's bad behavior.
Right.
And I don't think that the audience really did love that. So I do think that the audience, like, you become like almost like a villain, might be the wrong word, but like an anti-hero if you can play your cards right. And I think that you would be just as popular as somebody who was like a complete good guy, like a Joe Anglim. So it would be interesting to see where we go in the next couple of years. Nick, who are some of the other characters that have really appealed to you this season?
I've definitely enjoyed watching all of them more than I thought I would. I've really enjoyed watching Ty this season and Sierra and Michaela. And these are people that didn't resonate with me the first time. I'd thought that Sierra, it was interesting because she's playing a really forceful game. I think that she thinks that people perceived her a certain way and she's really actively going against that, you know, but I think that maybe she's gone too far, you know. This is something that I wanted to ask you. Do you know when we talk about the, like, everyone knows by now that you don't go and say, Rob, I think we should vote off, you know, Billy Bob. You say instead, who do you want to vote off? Like, we know that. Mm-hmm. That's well-trodden territory. But I think there's a new extension of this, and I thought of this while I was watching Sierra. She said something along the lines of, I want to take you to the final three. And that's just, like, not the way you say it. Like, I personally think that the evolution of that should now be, can you take me to the final three?
Ooh, I thought you were going to say, should we go to the final three? As opposed to, no, I'm taking you to the final three.
No, I feel,
going back to, Sandra and Russell, where he's telling her, like, I think I should take you to the final three because you won't get any votes. And then, of course, Sandra ultimately says to that, so you like, can you take me to the final three? You don't think that comes across as desperate?
No, I seriously think that what people want in the game, and this is from my experience, and I can only speak about that, is that people want to feel like that they can move you around like a chess piece and they don't have to worry about you. If you're walking into conversations saying, I'm going to take you, and then I'm going to take you, and then we're going to go to the end, I think it sends the wrong kind of message. So I think that more people need to be saying, like, did you want to take, if you take me to the final three, like what Sandra did with Russell, it puts the power in their hands. They feel like you are like their commodity, and kind of like we get this dynamic where, okay, good, this person is deferring to me. I don't have to worry about them anymore. I just thought it was an interesting thing that kind of came up when I heard Sierra just kind of saying, I want to take this person, I want to take that person.
I think it really depends on the person, because like if you were doing that to somebody, I feel like that person might ultimately come away. Or if I was saying that to somebody, what are they up to? Well, what's the play here? Whereas if Ty did that, I think somebody might say, oh, yeah, great. I could definitely take you to the final three, Ty. That's fine. So I think it's really more of a case-by-case basis. But I do agree with you on the first point in that I should take you to the final three is insulting.
Yes, I think so.
It's like, not only do I think that I can beat you, I'm also going to be the one making all the plans.
Yeah, exactly. It sends the wrong message. But I just thought that was like super interesting. And again, like the talking, I know I'm an English teacher, but just like talking about like the use of a pronoun every here and now, every once in a while, can really change the nature of a conversation.
Okay. Anybody else stand out to you this season?
Well, like your spirit animal, Brad Culpepper.
Yes.
According to BuzzFeed.
Yes. According to BuzzFeed. And yeah, I had my wife take the quiz also, and she also got Brad Culpepper. This is a Brad Culpepper-like household.
Rob,
right.
Pepperino.
Pepperino?
Sestanino, Pepper Culpepper, I don't know. Pepperino sounds good.
I guess so. That's
I did the BuzzFeed quiz. Who do you think I got?
Who did you get? I will say, much like Josh Wiggler, I'll say
no,
Zeke.
I got Sierra Dawn Thomas.
Oh, yeah, that's sheriff. What I was going to say. The sheriff.
Yeah.
The sheriff of podcasting, Nick Iadanza.
Oh, God. I'll stay away from that one. I thought that BuzzFeed quiz was absolutely ridiculous. Just really quickly,
it was hot garbage.
Yeah. While we're talking about Brad Pepperino or Rob Pepperino,
yes.
Did you see his spelling when he was holding up Ty at the
what did he spell?
He wrote Tia, and it's just like, are people equating Ty and Sia just like so much these days?
Oh, is that, you think that was a play on words?
I have no idea. But like for someone that they put on the word scramble, he couldn't scramble a three-letter name and call it Tia.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, maybe it was a play on words. Maybe he was going ahead and making a joke about this. I mean, that's only happened like within like 6 weeks in the real time of this episode.
Yeah, it could be. I think you're giving too much credit to the person when Zeke said, how do you spell longevity? And he spelled it T-O-G-E-T-H-E-R. we've had Culpepper math. Now we've got Culpepper
spelling?
Spelling. The three R's. He sucks at all of them. Reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Okay. Nick, do you have time for some questions from the listeners of the podcast?
Of course. Let's dive in.
All right. This is a question from Josh Lemer. Who from this season has been the most Nickish?
I would say if Nickish is an overenthusiasm for the game, it's probably Zeke. But I think the way that Lee intended it was someone who just was always over-explaining themselves and just wanted to kind of like get their point across. I would say Sierra Easton from episode one.
Okay.
I was like, Sierra, stop it. You're being Nickish.
Just don't be Nickish. Okay. All right. Kel Sherman wants to know which twist this season worked out and which didn't. Do you have a strong take? I know you like the sheer number of them, but do you have a favorite and a least favorite?
I really liked the fake exile. I thought that was so wacky. I would love them to see them bring that to like Australian Survivor, and it's just like you go to exile and there's like Sam standing there with like an advantage menu and he's trying to explain them and he doesn't even know what they do.
No, it'll be Christy.
Christy. Yeah. I just
got an advantage for you. She's going to give you all her secrets.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I thought that the legacy advantage is still a bit of a snoozer. And we did a bet last season. I don't know if you remember. We bet the power of the legacy advantage, and I was very hot.
And I feel like that we both feel like we won.
Do you know what? Upon review, I think you won that one. I'm going to give yourself a ding. I think you get that one.
Yeah, you felt like that it was going to be what? It was going to be like you were going to get to pick the person who went home or something like that?
I thought it was going to be this like seismic shift in the game that this thing they've been teasing for like 30 something days and it's like immunity. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an absolute dud on. yeah.
I mean, and then how pissed would you be? I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out this season, but imagine if you have like this like big plan and then you're going to vote somebody out. Like, let's say like they're going to go vote off Sheriff Don Thomas at 6 and then legacy advantage. And then you go home on that. And I'm like, what? Well, she stepped on it on the first day and I go home for this. Yeah. Like I played this amazing game and I'm out because of this.
Yeah. It's a dud. Get rid of it.
Oh, I'd flip a table. I'd geodice that.
Yeah. Flip that shelter.
Yeah, I'd flip over the voting urn.
Yeah, well, I need redemption. We need a new bet, okay? We need a new bet. So I propose an idea, okay? What do you think the chance is that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about all these advantages and they're all going to get played at once. What do you think the chance is of at least 2 or 3 advantages being played at the same time?
Okay, so let's make the over under 2.5. Okay. So 2.5. So basically, whether it's Sarah's extra vote plus legacy advantage plus idol, all 3 of the idols, 2 of the idols, and the legacy advantage, whatever it is. Okay. Which side do you want?
I would say that it's going to happen because of the chain reaction that we saw in, Cambodia. But look, just to spice it up, I'm happy to say it won't happen.
Well, I could go either. I'm more tempted to say it is going to happen.
Yeah, I think that it depends how the next few votes go. I think if everyone's kind of like holding tight with them in their pocket and then they kind of want to burn them because they want to get to that top 5, then it'll happen. But all right, you say that it will. I say that it won't. Let's see. Let's see if I can get my redemption back from Rob Peppering.
Right, because basically the legacy advantage is going to get played no matter what. You know, somebody's going to use that at 6. And then you also have you start to get to the point where it's like, okay, the idols have a expiration date where you can't use them after 5. And you also have this thing going on where we'll probably talk about it again next week more, where we get down to the final 8 and the final 6, where there is a rock draw that could be triggered by somebody. And then Sarah's vote Steel is going to expire as well. So I feel like around that 6, I feel like that could really be crunch time with a lot of these things expiring.
Maybe we need to make it 3 advantages.
Well, I mean, that's basically, I mean, it is 3. If it's only 2, you win. And if it's 3 or higher, then I win.
Lock it in. Okay. Stay tuned.
That'd be exciting. That'd be exciting.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. You know, it's an interesting advantage for Zeke that he had in the game, seeing that a legacy advantage did happen at the final 6. He would be the only person that would know. Michaela would not have known that because she wasn't there unless somebody told her. Yeah. So I wonder if Zeke had floated that idea to anybody to say, hey, just so you know, there's in Millennials versus Gen X, at the final 6, there was this thing, the legacy advantage. I don't know if they did it again, but it's possible there could be somebody with immunity at the final 6. I know
that
I
would have been
a
good question for him. That's good. Yeah. Oh, we'll never know.
Okay, I mean, he's not dead.
Okay, I guess we might know. We might know.
like, we might not know for like 2 weeks.
Okay.
All right. Patrick Tormey has a question for you, Nick. A little big picture question. Are returning player seasons broken? All the big names seem to go out early, which makes for an uninspiring post-merge. Yes, I know Suri is there, but she avoided Tribal Council until the merge. Do you feel like that Survivor has an issue with returning player seasons?
I don't know. I love returning player seasons. I know that people say, oh, just like, let's just get back to the newbies. We've seen these people before, but I love them. I think they're so interesting, and that even when all the good people go, like, I'm still keen on seeing, you know, the fact that Brad has changed, and I liked, you know, the evolution of Sarah and stuff like that. So I don't think they're broken. I think they break our hearts as fans all the time, but I don't think they're broken. I just, you know, let's look at the best, some of the, what are considered the best seasons ever. That's, you know, Heroes, Villains, and Micronesia, and, you know, a couple of others as well, but, you know, they always provide. So they break our hearts, but they are not broken as a format.
No, I don't think that they're broken. I think that people sort of forget that, you know, most people liked Cambodia, you know, that was just three seasons ago, but I do think that Survivor has an issue with the casting of a mishmash season like this,
yeah,
where on the high end, you had people that could have been returning players for any all-star season that they ever imagined. And then on the low end, you had people that was maybe some, you know, a little bit of some questionable choices in terms of who you're going to bring back. And then to have those players in a season, and again, I say this as somebody who went through the first All-Stars where you could maybe argue that point as well. I think that the people who are the more legendary figures will be targeted more in that scenario. Whereas if you look at Heroes versus Villains, yes, you do have some legends of the game, but for the most part, there wasn't that huge of a difference between most of the cast and whoever you want to say are the biggest names that are out there. Everybody was a big name.
Yeah.
And then in Cambodia, everybody was on the same playing field in that they all had played once. There wasn't that big of a deal between, okay, maybe like, oh, you know, Spencer's really popular, but it wasn't like that there was that big of a difference between him and or whoever. You know, I don't know if people even thought about it that way, but everybody was in the same boat. So there was no like, hey, why don't we all target these people? Because we all came in higher than fifth place. Let's get rid of all the people that, you know, there were no winners there.
Yeah.
So I think that what they need to probably try to be more specific in terms of who they're bringing back and not have there be this sort of like a chasm between haves and have nots.
That's a very good point. And I think that maybe I've never thought about it, but I think that's why Second Chance was so good, because they were all working from the same point. And maybe we need a Second Chances too. But I do think that this season has been the most lopsided. We're used to getting them back and then them staying all the way to the end, like in a fans versus favorites season. You know, like, so this has been a bit strange for us. But yeah, I don't know. It's not broken. Keep bringing them back, please. Please. I love them.
Alice Borelli wants to know, what is something that Nick wishes he had taken to the island? If you could give a single piece of advice to castaways playing for the longer season time, what would it be?
Well, what I would bring to the island would definitely be some props for Tribal Council. Jesus Christ.
Yes. You like that?
I think it's so funny. Like, maybe like next time she'll pull out like a hula hoop or like set off a firework in the, you know, in the fire pit in the middle, or like how good would like a novelty like foam finger just kind of like as someone's walking out, you're just like na 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 na, hey, yeah, hey, good.
I've seen that somewhere. Yeah.
That would be good. But in terms of like what I would actually say to bring, I don't know. Advice for playing 55 days, it's not about what you bring to the island. It's about your stamina. Conventional wisdom says that if you want to make 55 days, you've got to play a nice tight game. But where's the fun in that, I say?
Nick, can I ask you some Survivor New Zealand questions that I got from the listeners?
I would love that.
Okay. Of course, can you give us quickly the format for Survivor New Zealand for any of our American listeners or international listeners that are not familiar with what they're doing?
Of course. So if you had fatigue from 55 days of Survivor AU, well, we've got a treat for you because Survivor New Zealand is only 40 days, I think, or 41 or something like that.
41?
So, yeah, some weird number that's like so close to 39, it probably should just be 39.
Yeah,
so we've got 16 castaways, so we've gone back to that kind of older format, two tribes, and the rumor mill, and I guess it's been confirmed out there on the internet, so it's not a spoiler, is we've got Redemption Island. So I was concerned when I heard that there would be Redemption Island, but I don't know. It might work. It might not. I'm really excited to go into Survivor New Zealand because I think it's going to be another way to play the game that is more simplified. A lot of people say, you know, oh, we need to go back to that old school Survivor, the Australian Outback or whatever. I'm not of that camp. So it would be interesting to see what happens when we do that. And maybe we can silence some of those critics if it doesn't work. And if it does, then maybe, hey, maybe they've got a point. But it'll definitely be a lower budget. It'll definitely be different. I think there's going to be quite a few fans on the show as well. Like early cast assessments, there's people mentioning Fabio and Boston Rob and stuff like that. And that doesn't mean it's going to be a great season, but at least it means that some people will know the mechanics of the game and can maybe explain it to the people who are just like, "Oi, bro, I'm out here for an adventure." So I think it's going to be interesting. We may need accent subtitles for accents, though, for some people.
Yeah.
Holy crap, you have to tune in for how the host says Nicaragua. It is like, it's like he's chewing on like some giant like chewing gum in his mouth when he says it. It's crazy. So a little fun thing to look out for.
Now, you told me this a little while back, but this season was actually filmed before Australian Survivor?
Yeah, I heard that. I can't confirm that. I've tried to do a bit of internet searching. Maybe someone out there can confirm. Maybe one of the people who are on the show, that's maybe if they're listening, get in touch with me and let me know. I'd love to know. I heard that it filmed way back before we left and that they were just kind of flying blind, basing it on in terms of what Australia did. So these people have been waiting a really, really long time for it to air.
It's over a year, right?
Yeah. Do you know what's
also close to it?
What's also funny is that I've kind of calculated I was voted out the same day as Ozzy for Game Changers. And he's been waiting a really long
time.
Just
another thing you have in common.
Yeah. He's been waiting a long time as well. So these poor people that have been sitting on this secret, I'm really glad for them that we get to see it all. So keep an eye out. It's going to be really fun.
All right, so the listeners had some questions. This is a question from Mo Saunders. How do you feel the Redemption Island theme is going to work out? Will it be mateship or an epic fail? P.S. Love you, Bay.
Love you, Bay. Mateship, yeah. Well, I think mateship is epic fail, isn't it?
Oh, come on, too soon.
Look, I'm hopeful. I think that when there's 16 people, you have the space to tell the story of people at Redemption Island. When we've got more people than that, it's kind of chewing into time that we don't want to waste getting to know the bigger cast. So I don't know. Maybe this is the way it works. Maybe New Zealand is going to be the pioneers. They're going to be the pioneers of how to work Redemption Island.
It'll be interesting to see what they do episode format wise. It's going to be twice a week. My problem with Australian Survivor is that I feel like there were too many episodes where nobody went home. It'll be interesting if they end up using the second episode of the week to sort of play out more of the Redemption Island stuff. I wonder if we'll end up seeing more of that. So I actually had said this with Australian Survivor where we had so many days, so many people, so many episodes, but it was like people weren't going home. I feel like I would rather have had like, okay, like keep voting people out, but then, you know, we could do more stuff with Redemption Island.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, ended up bringing somebody back twice, it's, I guess it's like having a cast of 18.
I think it definitely has life within it. So no one write it off just yet until we've seen the product, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah. We'll see. This is a question from David Baltazar. Kiwis are better than Aussies at rugby. Will they also be better at Survivor?
And the rivalry begins. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of questions about Kiwis versus Aussies, and it remains to be seen. So we have been like the big brother, like punching up the little brother for so many years. But I don't know. I think New Zealand's got some fight in it. They were the first place around the world to give the women the vote, and they're trailblazers. They know what they're doing. So
they're going to let their women vote on this season of Survivor?
Yeah. I know, what a scandal. No, so I think New Zealand has some cool stuff up its sleeve. I was watching our season, I rewatched just to kind of get prepared. We did an amazing race a few years ago. Our final season of Amazing Race was Australia versus New Zealand. And that was great. That was funny. There was definitely the Australian teams definitely wiped the floor with the New Zealand team. So we'll see if that happens again.
Megan Z wants to know, are the rumors true? The biggest twist to come is that New Zealand Survivor will end up being 4 days a week to surpass Australian Survivor.
No, that's actually incorrect. It's going to be 7 days a week.
7 days a week. Oh, my God. Do we know what the episode run times are going to be?
So Sunday night will be 90 minutes, and then Monday night will be 60 minutes.
Wow. Okay. So 2.5 hours. God bless you, man.
Hey, we'll see if I've still got my marbles by the end of this, but I'm hopeful. Don't scare me, Rob.
Okay.
Can I say something about the population size of New Zealand? I did a bit of Googling. 4.5 million people in all of New Zealand. That's less than just the city of Melbourne or the city of Sydney. So there's a good chance some of these people know each other, and that's not trying to be like facetious or anything like that. I'll be interesting to see if that plays out. So, yeah, another interesting thing to track, because on the first 15 minutes, there's a few people that say, oh, yeah, I really wanted to play with that guy. And I'm like, what? The game hasn't even started. How do you know that? Like, I got it. Yeah, I know, blah, blah, or something weird like that. So that's another story to track.
I mean, we've had that in Big Brother Canada where contestants like know each other for, like, coming into the season. Like, I think it's happened a couple of times. So interesting subplot. But again, Andrea and Zeke knew each other. And look how that played out.
I remember an episode of Big Brother back when Big Brother was on here in Australia. The people walked in and this girl was like, oh, I know you. We party patched one day at a nightclub. I'm like, wow, okay.
Party patched?
Party patched. Oh, sorry, a pash, like a kiss. A big passionate kiss. You've never heard that before, Rob?
No, but that might be the hashtag. What is that, party pash?
Party pash, like a P-A-S-H, pash.
Okay.
Oh, I am educating you on all things south of the equator.
Wow. Okay. All right. So did Lee and Elle party pash on the island?
I don't think so on the island, but they're definitely party pashing now. They're in love. Love watching it all unfold.
Okay. All right. Okay. The latecomer party pash or Pepperino? What's the hashtag?
Oh, I like Rob Pepperino, but party pash is pretty good.
Okay. Good stuff. All right. Of course, you could listen to Nick in just a couple days on the first episode of our International Survivor feed and recapping the first week of Survivor New Zealand. Do you know how many weeks it's going to be?
I'm assuming it's going to be around 7 weeks, but I could be wrong. Maybe no one will ever go home. It'll be like Australian Survivor and it'll just go until the end of the year. But we'll see. I think 7 weeks is going to be right. So, yeah, first week with Phoebe Timmons. Come tune in and hear what we've got to say. It's going to be great.
Okay, should be a jam-packed couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to checking it out as well. Will you have me on at some point as a guest?
If you play your cards right, Rob, maybe.
If I play my cards right, okay. All right, so you could subscribe to that feed, robiswebsite.com/SurvivorNZ for that, or you could subscribe to the RehapUps feed at robiswebsite.com/RehapUps. Of course, all of those episodes will also be available on robhasawebsite.com. You could follow Nick Iadanza on Twitter, and his Twitter handle is simply Nick Iadanza.
Yep, same on Twitter, same on Instagram. Hit me up. I'm always putting stuff on like my Instagram story, funny little stuff about Survivor. So, hit me up with questions about New Zealand. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. But remember, I'm not watching it in New Zealand time, so no spoilers, please. Thank you.
Yes, no spoilers. You tweeted earlier today, notes prep for RHAP Game Changers pod with Rob Cesternino. Last time they were War and Peace. This time more of a Moby Dick length. Hashtag not a Troyzan joke.
What's that little scream at the end? Is that when he kind of like gets the Moby Dick out? Is that
spinning green?
Yeah. All right. Nick, great job. Always a pleasure catching up, and best of luck. Bon voyage on the New Zealand Survivor.
Thank you so much. Catch you later, guys.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Nick Iadanza back on the podcast. Always great to catch up with Nick, and really excited to have him covering the International Survivor for us. And again, it almost killed Stephen and I going back to last fall, although there were a lot of things going on where it started in the summer and it was fine, and then U.S. Survivor started. So it was a lot of stuff, and I think Big Brother OTT was also going on. So that was a lot, but I'm very happy to have it in such good hands with Nick. All right. So looking ahead to our next podcast, I'm going to be catching up with Josh Wiggler back in the Wiggle Room once again on Monday. And then on Tuesday, I will talk with David Bloomberg about why Zeke lost. And then, of course, News AF with Tyson and Danny, and then back to Survivor Know-It-Alls coming up again. No live show. We are going to be in Toronto this week, but we will try to have video and audio posted as soon as we can after the fact. And of course, I'm going to see so many people up in Toronto who are patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. We have a lot of activities planned up there. We also have a lot of information about this Survivor New Zealand, how to watch and discussion, and much more happening in our patron Facebook group. To find out more information about that, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/patron to find out how to become a patron of the podcast. All right, lots of fun on this bonus coverage. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.